Media Production.
They all gave their consent to an autopsy after they passed away.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And some had, this is crazy. When they looked at the brain of some of the nuns, they had significant signs of Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's that almost like a plaque. It's something that grows in the brain.
Plaques and tangles.
Yes. And did not exhibit the symptoms. I mean, it blew them away. Not only does it seem to reduce the onset of it,
mm-hmm.
you can even have it and they didn't demonstrate it because they were engaged socially.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Because of what we were talking about is so interesting, I clicked record and I didn't tell you.
That's okay.
But
yeah, you can.
So I worked with the Alzheimer's and dementia population and their families and teaching their families how to respond and treat their loved ones that are struggling with dementia. And that was something that we always stressed was, even if you're in a room with them and it feels like they don't know that you're there, they know that you're there. Mm-hmm. And so you have to, whatever it might be, if someone grew up and for 40 years, they read the newspaper first thing in the morning, you want to figure out a way to connect with those people, even if they can't maybe even talk to you.
Yeah.
Read them the newspaper. If they can't do it themselves, then you might as well step up and do what they've been used to. And those are the ways of it's like continually exercising for them. And then Absolutely. Also it's a way of finding connection for you because it's definitely not the same, you know, as it once was. But that's really interesting because the nuns were able to practice and exercise their brain so much that it wasn't necessarily protecting them from Alzheimer's, but it was like allowing them to almost bypass the effects of it.
Well, here's one theory. If I have only 9 memories of you, I mean, I'm just pulling out of thin air. If I only have 9 memories of you, and where some of those memories are stored is the place where Alzheimer's has damaged. I might only have 4 memories of you now.
Right.
If I have 5,000 memories of you, right? In other words, Alzheimer's going to eat your brain for lunch, mm-hmm. like a pizza, then have an extra large pizza to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All
right. Right.
Yeah.
Have so many, you know, neurochemical connections, mm-hmm. pathways that, you know, you lose X amount, but you've got so many to begin with. And I think that's what really begins to, and again, I'm not an expert. I'm a life coach, but I love to read. It's important for me. So, you know, can we jump in?
Yes. Okay. Usually we would discuss it, but we went right into some interesting stuff. So.
Well, we could do a follow-up in terms of Alzheimer's. I'd love to hear more about your experience.
Yeah.
My father died with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And so we probably have an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Why don't you just do an introduction now and you add whatever title you want? Cause I know you're involved in a lot of different stuff. So go ahead.
Well, my name's David Geyer and live here in Traverse City. I'm a life coach. I'm also known as a personal development coach, mm-hmm. pretty much the same approach. I work with employees in personal development. And then I do, intensive one-on-one coaching, primarily with men, just because, you know, it's a little more appropriate for me to do that because we get by ourselves 3.5 days, unplug in a cabin, in a, you know, quiet area.
Yeah.
And we really go long into the person's story. So it's just a really interesting, very lively conversation over 3.5 days to get some perspective and some insight and to understand some of the connections in their life. So, love doing that. I've been doing that 15, 18 years now. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really started to see, and I do a retreat. So you're kind of asking for an introduction. My wife and I love to create space in people's lives that gives them a heartbeat again.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting conversations, a retreat, film, having people in the house, whatever it takes for people to kind of go, oh yeah, that's right. I'm back now, you know, because we can kind of flatline in life a lot. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's what we do. We're just inviters and we create opportunities to bring hope again, to kind of get you back into that front part of your brain where you're excited and imagining and hoping things. So Years ago, one of my first clients in life coaching had a really good experience. Mm-hmm. Okay. He was sort of like the old Ebenezer Scrooge after the night of the ghosts. Mm-hmm. Right. And depending on what you're used to seeing in terms of film, there's a number of versions, you know, he's practically dancing. He was, you know, and so that kind of giddy mountaintop experience, which, you know, I was grateful for, really enjoyed him. We didn't know each other at all until he came, but I noticed it was almost over the top. Mm. Okay. So I'm glad the framework works, but I'm like, wow. And what I've heard from him and from a number of men over the years is, in 3 days, you now know more about me than anybody in my life, including my own spouse.
Yeah.
So here's how I defined loneliness from those experiences. I'll tell you what it's not. I don't think loneliness is being alone. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of loneliness that some people experience like that. But most Americans are always with other people.
Yeah.
In the mall, in the restaurant, in the pub, in the church, at work, mm-hmm. we're surrounded. Loneliness is not being known.
Okay.
And if we start there and we land there, if no one really knows you, you will live under something that's profound in your life that will rob you of much of your life, I believe, including your mental health.
Yeah.
Okay. If we look at it that way, it's epidemic, at least in the United States. So now 3 out of 5 Americans indicate that they're lonely. 3 out of 5. Only 8% of Americans report having any meaningful conversations with their own neighbors. Mm-hmm. Less than 1 in 10. More disturbing is that only 18% of millennials, and they would be age around 25 to 41 now, only 18% of millennials even believe they could trust a neighbor.
That's wild. Yeah.
Is that crazy?
Yeah. Cause I'm thinking about my little community and you commented on it when you were walking up the front steps of just how quiet it is here. And I do feel a sense of peace here. And I think that a lot of that peace that I feel is because I do know my neighbors and have kind of made connections with them. Now I'm not close with neighbors on every side,
right?
But there's one in particular that I have a connection with. And oddly enough, it's because one night, late into the evening, it was like 10 PM. He called me. We had exchanged phone numbers just simply because, if we were using a shared service or something or trying to figure out what was going on in the neighborhood, not because we're going to be friends necessarily.
Yeah.
He calls and he's like, "Hey, I just cut my finger really bad. I need to drive to the hospital or ride to the hospital." And so my wife and I jumped in the car. We ran over, picked him up, took him to the hospital. And it was very interesting because it was a serious injury, but it wasn't so serious that we were worried about him losing his life. Right. So we were able to have conversations on the way that where he's trying to take his mind off how bad his finger hurts.
Yeah.
And Abby's trying to take her mind off the fact that someone's bleeding profusely in the front seat. And so we connected with him in a really unique way. All the noise was cut out. It was just us, in that. And now we have a connection with this guy. Like we could have otherwise taken years to develop. But we did it in one night.
And you had a shared experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the ways we keep our memories is that there was an emotional impact at the point when the memory was made. Not the only way. I don't know why I have these random memories from when I was 3. I don't remember emotional impact.
Yeah.
But one of the ways we keep memories is because there's an emotional impact. One of the ways we experience emotions is that we have an emotional language to use. You actually have a vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And vocabulary and conversation and all the nuances of how we feel and experience life are drawn out in really good, healthy, meaningful, lively, many times enjoyable conversations. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, again, only 8% of Americans have any meaningful conversation with their neighbors. Only 32% say they trust them. And if you're a millennial, less than 1 in 5 have any trust. So, here's the crazy part. In most ways, abductions, crime, we are safer, far safer than we were when I was growing up in the 70s. Mm-hmm. We're just a safer world.
Yeah.
And yet we trust nobody. So, and it's worse for men. And you said, you know, I'm interested in loneliness, particularly in terms of how it impacts men. Men account for almost 80% of all suicides in our country. Mm. 8 out of 10. In the Western world, males die by suicide 3 to 4 times more than females. I believe that's from the World Health Organization a number of years ago. Rates of suicide are highest for American Indian and white men. Look at this comparison to two other demographic groups. They kill themselves at a rate 10 times higher than the rate of Hispanic and Black women. Hmm. 10 times the rate of suicide. And they're at least twice as likely to die from a drug overdose. So men seem to be struggling in ways that are particular to them. You know, you may have heard or bumped into this idea of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really dangerous idea. Mm. I mean, by all means, men can behave toxically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we need to talk about toxic loneliness, toxic fatherlessness, toxic isolation. Mm-hmm. So the largest study in terms of how much research was done and for how long is the Harvard study on human development. And it started over 90 years ago with two populations of men. And then eventually it involved the men's spouses, their kids, all of that. And they literally tracked from the time these men were 17 or 18 years of age till they died. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so they have tens of thousands of pages of data on these people.
Yeah.
Okay. The number one contributing factor to a sense of happiness, longevity, the best thing a man can experience is meaningful relationships with others. The number one predictor of a good life for men is that. And that's probably the number one thing men struggle with the most. Mm. And so we now have the longest study that we know of in human history. And it's saying men are lonely and it affects every aspect of their life.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you bring up toxic masculinity, and it is one of those things that, you know, I do think it exists. I guess if there were fears for me surrounding it, is that, are we attributing things that aren't toxic masculinity to toxic masculinity? Are we kind of overshooting that definition?
Absolutely.
But now I'm wondering, because you'd said toxic loneliness. And so if there is toxic masculinity that's playing out in households or whatever, is it because those men don't have that sense of community that's supposed to be holding their behaviors in check? You know, if we talk about being surrounded by other men of character, if I'm not, my behavior is probably going to accurately reflect my lack of, I don't know, time that I spend with quality men.
Quality anyone. Yeah, absolutely. Right. We just have to simply admit and restore something fundamental to being a human being. Mm-hmm. You cannot live alone.
Yeah.
You simply can't do that. The problem is it's almost not modeled anywhere now. Mm. Yeah. The typical person, if they go to school at age 4 or 5, is told what to do, when to show up, what's on the test, what's to be expected. The bell rings at this time. 42 minutes later, the bell rings. You've got 4 minutes to get to your locker, to the next room. All right. And if they move into employment or they move into higher ed, it's the same thing. Even if they move into faith communities, we meet on Sunday. We start at 10. You'll have 10 minutes of this, and then you'll have 40 minutes of this. And then you'll take 2 minutes to shake hands or whatever.
Yeah. We get into routines, or we have things laid out for us.
Has anyone stopped to think what that does to your brain and to your body? If you've been told what to do, it's a form of being institutionalized from the time you're a small child. Then how do you step into the unknowns of life as an adult?
Yeah. So oddly enough, a lot of this is relating back to a conversation that just came out today that I had with someone. He was talking a little bit about that, like generalizing and the power behind generalizing. And I think in a lot of ways, being ready for whatever is presented to you. And yeah, if we are I think, restrained and there's too much structure, particularly, I think, at young ages, then maybe we aren't as resilient to the unpredictability of life. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that there isn't room for structure. I think some of life is being able to adapt to structure too when it's appropriate, probably. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If there's too much structure, then we're going to respond robotically rather than in a natural way to how the world is
absolutely
throwing difficulties at us, you know?
Right. And if we talk about toxic behavior, here's for me, the most dangerous idea of that. And not everyone would even define it that way, but I've heard it defined that at your essence as a man, there's something wrong with you. Mm. You are fundamentally flawed.
Yeah.
Say that to any population on the planet, get them to believe it and see what happens. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be good.
Yeah. You wouldn't respond well to that.
No. I mean, if you literally can convince somebody else that the only solution to you is to stop being you. Mm-hmm. Okay. The amount of damage and the amount of hopelessness that produces is, I don't even know if you can measure it. So not only do we need good conversations and shared time together and making space for that type of human interaction, they've got to be positive. Mm-hmm. There has to be an assumption. Hey, there's something really good inside of Taylor.
Yeah.
I may not get it at first, right? We all kind of pose, we kind of present what we feel like we have to present, right? But in time, I'm going to go, wow, I'm really seeing the goodness that he has. So there's an assumption that I think we have to hold on to and start there. And that is, hey man, there's something inside of you that's mm-hmm. just amazing. Something that you were made to be, something that was given to you. If you're a person of faith, we just say it's something that was bestowed upon you in the way you bear the image of your creator. Mm-hmm. And it's good and it's worth exploring and it's worth being curious about. And it's even worth being curious about what happened to it, mm-hmm. right? How it was damaged, how you gave it away, how you might be cutting deals every day in your life and not even realizing it and giving away that strength. Do you see this shift?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it almost seems like a lot of it is dependent, and you're right, on who you're having the conversation with and how they're even defining something like masculinity. Yeah. So I think that if we're talking about masculinity on its face is not bad. A, it depends on how you define masculinity. And then it would also depend on how am I flexing that masculinity. Now, if I'm flexing my masculinity and saying that, women are lesser and they don't deserve certain things, that's too much of that thinking. But,
or it's the wrong thinking.
Yes. Yeah, so right.
That's not true strength.
Right. Exactly. And so I think that, when we're figuring out how to maneuver these conversations, but I have to figure out first, how are people defining certain keywords like that, like masculinity, and then understanding that I think there can be too much of something. So food is great, but if there's too much of it and you gain weight, your health is compromised, all these different types of examples. I don't know if that relates exactly, but that's what I'm imagining. We have conversations between people that right at the onset aren't even coming around the same definition of something. You know, they're talking about different definitions of the same word, I think.
Yeah. And sadly, in our culture now, it's way easier to have an opinion and to post and to argue than to actually go do something. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think one of the solutions to many different issues, problems, is getting in the same space with the people we want to care about. It's not throwing a switch at election time. It's just not. I mean, sure, that's an important thing. Very important thing. But what are you doing with all the other hundreds of thousands of moments mm-hmm. of your life? Who do you hang with? We care more about global issues than the single parent that's two doors down from us. Mm-hmm. We don't know them. We don't realize they haven't had any time away from their child, perhaps in a year, that they're lonely. They feel completely alone. They go to work all day and then try to figure how to, connect with. You know, I teach adult learners. I did it in class, for many years, and now I do it online. And the stories that I hear when we in these threaded discussions of single parents, I mean, they're doing the jobs of two or three different people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to create a national movement for single parents. Mm-hmm. My national movement is, do you know any? And could you be friends with her or him? You see where I'm going? So we've lost that. And it's killing us. It's literally, so loneliness, being chronically lonely, in terms of adverse effects on your health, is the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes every day of your life. Hmm. Chronic loneliness has, again, an adverse effect on mortality, 3 to 1 over obesity. Hmm. 3 times as toxic as being overweight. And we've had a lot of discussion over the years around, you know, our problem with obesity. Mm-hmm. Loneliness is far more deadly.
Well, and it sounds like we probably have people who are dealing with both, you know?
Absolutely.
And so that's the,
not only dealing with both, they're probably related.
Yeah.
Yep. So, Americans, spend upwards of 11 hours every day on average interacting in some way with a screen, with virtual reality. That's just under 80 hours a week, and that's before the pandemic.
And we say we don't have time to do some of these other community building things.
Well, yeah. So when people go, okay, so what's the point, David? What else should we do? I just say anything.
Yeah.
Do anything else instead of interacting with digital media. Mm-hmm. Take a walk, take a nap, make a meal, call a friend. Go study fall leaves and press them. Smell a flower.
Yeah.
Listen to great music. Right? Your amygdala is lights up when you're stressed. All right. It's just that, oh my gosh, what is that? Oh no, that's not a snake. That's your power cord coming to your soundboard. Oh, whew. Okay. Something that's inside of my brain first went, oh my gosh, danger. Mm-hmm. That's your amygdala.
Yeah.
Your amygdala lights up and has a good time when you listen to music. Huh?
Yep.
So you may go, well, that's digital, but but you're not necessarily, you're not gazing in it. You're just hearing sound. Mm-hmm. Your amygdala lights up, when you hear the sounds of nature.
Yeah.
So, let me recommend, you can just Google this. And there was a book called Chasing the Scream.
Scream or screen?
Scream.
Okay. The Halloween Scream.
Chasing the Scream by a guy named Johan Hari. And he did something fascinating in the book. And I remember this because I'm old enough that I was there. Mm-hmm. But in the 70s, the Ad Council came out with a public service message that said something like, there is a drug so powerful that when given to so addictive when that when given to rats, let me try to say that again. There is a drug that's so powerful that when given to rats is so addictive that the rat will use and use until it's dead. It's called cocaine. Mm-hmm. It could happen to you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then where is the, this is your brain. If you remember that one, this is your brain on drugs, and he drops the eggs in the frying pan. Okay. The experiment behind that first message was an American researcher put a rat in a cage and put 2 bottles of water in front of the rat. And one was laced with medical grade cocaine, but it was tasteless and odorless. The rat had no idea that one of them was.
Yeah. It was like sugar in it too, or something.
Nope. Nope. And it quickly became so addicted to the cocaine laced water that it stopped every other activity. The fatality rate was over 90%. The addiction rate was like 100%. And it was a horrible, horrible outcome. What people don't know much about, and this is what Hari brought out, is that a Canadian researcher, and it was right after the research was released, noticed something about the experiment. And that was that the rat was alone. Hmm. So he said, what if we duplicate the experiment, except I create the best of my ability in a lab, an ideal community of rats?
Yeah.
And he nicknamed it Rat Park. And there were all kinds of tunnels and things to go find and things to store and scurry about. And there were male rats and female rats and all kinds of things to do. And then the same, quote, drug dealer comes to town. In the center of Rack Park, you got the two bottles, one laced with medical grade cocaine. The addiction rate was almost zero.
Wow.
Rats would try it. They'd get slightly addicted. But he noticed that they quickly tired of it. And their withdrawals were, and again, you can't interview a rat, so he didn't know for sure. But the only thing he noticed is that there'd be a slight twitch until they were done. Mm-hmm. So what this author is asking, it puts it this way. Ask most Americans what causes drug addiction. They'll say, well, the drugs, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe what causes addiction is the kind of cage you live in. Mm-hmm. And we now live in a virtual cage of 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I'm with you. And people that have tuned into my last couple episodes are aware of this social media, these social media views that I have and some of the changes that I'm implementing, have implemented and are planning on implementing further. But you're right. I think I'm reminded, I have a poster of both Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. They're two of my favorite athletes.
Okay.
And there's been recent documentaries done on them. And a lot of the things that people said made them really special outside of their abilities on the basketball court is their ability to be present in whatever situation they were in. Mm-hmm. And so they're present in the locker room. They're present when they were able to be with their families. They were present with their families. And that allowed them to just command the stage in a way that's pretty unique to people that have that much going on and have that much asked to them. And so it's led me to kind of ask myself, like, the power of being present in certain situations. And you can define being present as I'm present with you right now in this room. But what if I was on my phone? What if I was, you know, had Facebook knocking on the other side of my brain being like, hey, you're missing something right now. You better check it. Even though David's right across from you, mm-hmm. you can do both. Don't worry. You can make both happen. And I think we live in that cage of constantly having something else trying to grab our attention, and we're not present when we're supposed to be present. And so in a room full of people, if you're not present, you're still lonely.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So they did an experiment years ago with college students, and they gave them some sort of academic test, you know, a quiz in their course. There was something they had to take. And they did it in a few different ways. The first time the student could have their phone, have it on, and have it on the desk. Then it was take the test and the phone was with them, but it was turned off. Mm-hmm. And the last was take the test and the phone is not allowed to be in the room. It's back in their dorm or wherever else.
Yeah.
Every time they scored better. Mm. And they didn't look at their phone.
Right.
And that's the crazy part. So what they find out is there's a part of your brain that's always scanning the environment for very pertinent information, like your name. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you ever think about it, like you can be in a crowded restaurant and if you hear someone say, you know, Taylor, or you think you do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just something in your brain that goes, what, mm-hmm. what, right? It's a part of your brain that says, I am always scanning for pertinent information. Mm-hmm. That is now being occupied by your freaking phone, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, we are in new territory that we've never been to mm-hmm. as far as being human. That is what we're constantly thinking. Even when you're not thinking about it, you're thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it's a new thing. First iPhone came out in 2007. It didn't really have full capabilities until like Instagram, Facebook, all those things kicked off that I think are just as distracting as having the phone itself. So maybe in 2013, 14 is when social media on iPhones started to really kick off and cause a lot of distractions. And we don't know yet, I guess, we have ideas of how it's impacting people negatively, but I'm very curious. My generation being a millennial, we're split down the middle by something like technology. So mm-hmm. if there's someone who is on the younger end of being a millennial, way more of their life has been impacted by social media than my older brother, who's on the older end of being a millennial. And so we divide people into these generations, but we also have to remember there's things that are then dividing those generations.
Yeah.
And so I'm really curious, how am I going to be as a 70-year-old? How will I have been impacted by the things that I'm participating in, right. You know, like social media and technology.
Yep. Oh, I agree. I almost want to shift gears a little bit because you know, there's a lot about social media use. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some of the solutions? And again, a good topic around what you brought up with some of these top performers or top athletes that they know how to be present. I don't know what research is behind this, but I saw a lecture a few years ago that said the most powerful person in a room is the one who is calm. I mean, did not see that coming.
Yeah.
They're not distracted. They breathe slowly. They're simply present. There is power in that.
Yeah.
Solutions. How do we practice that? How do we practice that? Couple random thoughts. If you're going out with your friends, maybe you're going out with a couple other couples or friends or whatever. You know, the designated driver thing, right? Okay. If we drink, we need one that won't drink because you're going to be the person that gets us all home safe.
Yeah.
Okay. And then your turn this week. So we'll make, it's your turn this week. Okay, right. Taylor. Except instead of a designated driver, you're the designated phone guy. We are all going to choose to leave our devices behind and live in a world as if they don't exist. If you really, 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 really feel you can't do that in case there was some emergency,
right,
you give whatever significant other person, hey, Taylor's going to be our designated phone. His phone number's here. Please do not contact him in any way unless there really is an emergency, and go out and just feel what it feels like to spend 4 or 5 hours with other good people and none of you have a device on you. Just go feel what that feels like. I grew up with that. There was nothing that distracted us.
Yep.
All kinds of conversation, noticing people, talking to strangers all the time. We just got to do other stuff. You didn't even have a map to get somewhere.
All right.
And all the hilarious stories about getting lost or running out of gas or having to stop, oh, God forbid, at a stranger's house and ask for directions.
I was just about to,
Right?
Yeah. That I give this example, and I've given this example in the past, and some of it is due to their location in the UP, which is more rural even than where we're at here, parts of it. But also, I think there is a different attitude that I've seen, at least within my group of friends that live in the UP. And so when I would go up there and visit them, there wasn't this texting back and forth to finalize all the plans. It was a much more fluid, like, we're going to go to this spot. If other people show up, great. If they don't, maybe we'll swing by their house and we'll see what they're up to if they want to come by. And that was a very uncomfortable feeling for me because I like to solidify the plans. I like to know where people are going to be. And hey, if we have the phone and we can just verify through a text, we might as well do it, right? But no, there was something really freeing about just being like, hey, if we're going to go to the brewery, maybe we'll run into a couple of our other friends, you know, and we don't need to obsess over if they're going to be there or not, and just living life a little bit. And there are people in my generation and younger that couldn't imagine knocking on some stranger's door, asking for help. I don't know if they even like to knock on the door of someone that they know lives there without having first texted, called, made sure they're going to be home. And there's value in that for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And the sense of play and adventure that we had. I mean, my first sales job, I was all over the United States. I had paper maps, dude.
Yeah.
I had a book of maps, and then I'd kind of get, you know, the larger maps per state. Well, you know, a map doesn't tell you that they just took the bridge out 2 weeks ago. And, you know, you're just following a map and you're like, oh, crap. Yeah. I can't go that way.
Yep.
So then you have to figure that out. And yeah, it was frustrating, but there was just a sense of kind of adventure and exploring. And, you know, because the bridge went out, I had to go this other way and I bump into this cool little bitty town that I never would have gone to, except that I was diverted by something that happened in real time. And then I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I had to stop and I met this wonderful woman. She's been up there 40 years. And then boom, I have a story to tell. That's what we're missing.
Yeah.
That's what we're missing. So I didn't, you know, we talked about before we started here, I did a men's retreat last week. We had a really great time. First, we need to acknowledge that men are lonely in the sense that they are not known by other, by anyone else. Two, they're that way because they've never seen it modeled any other way. So when somebody comes through my Life Quest coaching, they just have a new normal in 3 days. Mm-hmm. Right. You're too young for this, but the old Young Frankenstein movie, Mel Brooks.
Ah, okay.
Okay. There's a really goofy scene. I think they literally made it up as they were filming mm-hmm. it. All right. Like somebody grabbed a pen and wrote something on labels and stuck them on glass jars. But, yeah. But poor Igor, Dr. Frankenstein sends him to get a brain for his amazing creation mm-hmm. that he's, you know, who now needs a brain, right? And he gets it and he comes back and he knows something's up. And he says, I promise, Igor, I won't get angry. Are you sure? Yes. What was the name on the jar of the blame, the jar of the brain? Yeah. And Igor kind of sheepishly goes, Abby? And then you see Dr. Frankenstein, he's holding back, right? He's like, Abby? What was the last name? Normal. Abby Normal. And then, of course, he's throttling him, trying to kill yeah. him, all right? I love that because here's the question. I'll ask whoever's listening. How Abby Normal may your normal be, and you have no idea. Mm. Because your normal is what you've experienced. That's it. Until something disrupts that and you get a new normal, you have no idea. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and there's many of ways to do this, but in my personal coaching, after 3 days, they're like, hey, this has been really, really different.
Yeah.
The men at that retreat a couple weekends ago, the number one piece of feedback we received, loved having real men in real time tell honest stories about their lives. Loved it. Love that we had time to be with other people and just talk about life and our journeys and our struggles and all of that. We want more of that. It was a new normal. We normally don't do that.
Yeah.
I'll give you one more phrase for people to think about. I wrote this down in a journal about 3 years ago. How do you measure what could have been, but never was?
Yeah, my brain hurts thinking about it.
Yeah. How do you measure what could have been, but never was? In other words, if we would have lived differently mm-hmm. and we didn't spend 80 hours doing something in a virtual world, and we actually saw it modeled and got to practice being curious about one another, instead of always jumping in with more information, mm-hmm. we just ask questions. We're genuinely interested in knowing another few human beings. What could you have experienced in your marriage, but you never did?
Yeah.
What friend did you could have had, but never met? What career opportunities did you not hear about? Mm-hmm. What level of joy could you have had when you were doing something super fun or you were super excited about something, but you had no one to share that with? Most people go, I really want to share my struggles and my pain. Great. Yes. We forget that. Well, okay. What do you feel when you've been to a really great movie? Like you just got back and you're like, oh my gosh, that's the best movie I've seen in 5 years.
Yeah. You got to tell somebody about it.
Yeah. Why?
I guess I don't know why.
Think about it. You just experienced something you absolutely love. Why do you want to invite others?
Well, I think I just want them to share in the experience that I had.
Mm-hmm. Now you go back to the movie. Hopefully you shut up, right? Mm-hmm. Because I know some, I'm like, stop it.
Yeah, don't give it away.
Yeah, but they're what? You're so excited. You're actually kind of double the pleasure because you're like, now mm-hmm. my good friend or my spouse or my child or whoever is with you, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
Right. Humans actually increase the amount of pleasure and joy they have when they're able to share it and realize that someone else is excited for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Rats in the park with the tunnels.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even in your good moments, you don't have as much. If you're going through those good moments by yourself.
Right.
Yeah. So can we move into the faith category? Or is that appropriate?
Yeah, I know it's important.
Okay. So you know, I'm a person of faith and I would be part of the Christian tradition. Of all religions that I know of in the world, Christianity has a core belief that's audacious and even, I would say, offensive to many. And that is that God became incarnate. In other words, took on human flesh to be with us. Okay? That is a core DNA of the Christian faith. Of all religions, Christianity should be about in the flesh, real-time connections. Sadly, what I see, and I get it, I was a pastor for years, we're trying to stay relevant. So now we do announcements with an iPad or something on screen, and it looks like a commercial, and then we put it online, and then you can, you know, get it on a, you know, a recording or whatever, and technology's helpful. Most people do not experience opportunities to speak and to actually be heard and understood in faith communities.
Yeah.
We do not practice incarnational experiences. If we did, we'd have a revolution, dude. Mm-hmm. Young people are not looking for something that's cool and tech savvy. They're saturated with that. Mm. It's all white noise.
Yeah.
What I think younger people, all people want is, hey, man, just come over to the house. For what? Just hang out. Mm-hmm. Inevitably. So we had a young couple over a couple nights ago. Zero interaction with any phone or media. We made good food. We sat on our boat. We put it in the oven and sat on the boat for as many minutes as we could without burning dinner. Mm-hmm. We drank a glass of wine. We just started to get to know each other. And the wife said, the spouse at the end of the evening said, you ask really good questions. And I said, thank you.
Yeah.
And it was really fun because I would love to get to know you. I used four questions that I learned years ago. Mm-hmm. Try this, folks. Try this. Try this with anyone, your child, your spouse, a good buddy over coffee. What's right in your life? What's not right in your life? What's missing in your life? And where are you confused? Mm. Right, not right, missing, confused. You don't have to do all four. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's probably more than enough in just one of those.
Well, you could start with one. Yeah. And if you're really tuned in, it'll lead to like 12 other questions that you have for them.
Yeah.
Right? What's missing in your life? You know, I'm bored. I have no adventure. Okay. Well, what would... Now you have the question. Mm-hmm. Well, what would adventure look like?
Yeah.
I'd love to go downhill skiing. Oh my gosh. I always downhill ski. And we always go, see, boom, yeah. You just cut them off. We do that all the time. Don't do that. Just, oh, downhill skiing. Why did you say that? Mm-hmm. You might find out the best memory they ever had of their father as a little kid.
Yeah.
Is when they skied. Oh my gosh. Does that open up like four other doors? Mm-hmm. Oh, really? So tell me about your dad. What did it feel like when you guys skied?
Right.
I've asked people a simple question. What was your favorite vacation spot growing up? Mm-hmm. They can answer it in any way and you'll have an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Right. Those four questions are at least decent primers. Hey, Taylor, another way to say it. What are you loving in life right now, man? Like what just feels like life? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, we got a puppy. Oh, great. What's his name? Boy or girl?
Yeah.
Why'd you get that one? What is she like? Tell me the story of how you found her, right? Hey, what could you add more to your life if you could? What's missing?
Right? Second puppy.
A second puppy. Okay. All right. You know, but you could just say, man, I mean, I haven't worked out in a long time. Or man, I haven't, Abby and I haven't gotten away for a while. Mm-hmm. Man, I haven't had a good conversation with my brother in months.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Why? Huh? What did it used to be like? You get it?
Yeah.
If we could just ask better questions, it would be really cool. Mm-hmm. and we can practice. How about this one? Young men, you might want to meet a lovely person someday. Let's just say you want to meet a lovely young woman someday. Do you want to learn how to talk to her when you're married? Wouldn't it be cool if young men had a conversation with another young woman that they weren't interested in? And even said, hey, listen, I'm not great with conversations. It would be really fun to just sit down and talk to you for a little bit and just ask you some questions and get to know you. Mm-hmm. Who knows what goodness can come out of that?
Right.
Right. Who's talking about that, Taylor?
Yeah, I don't see much of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So solutions are in time, real. Yeah. Real time. I've sort of lost my train.
In person.
Yeah.
Right.
In the flesh. Like right now, you are only 3 feet from me. If that, you could reach out and poke me. Now you didn't give me a little virtual poke your friend. I don't even know what that is. That's irritating. You could actually poke me and I would feel it. Mm-hmm. So there's something going on. So let's talk about this. In the world of counseling, you can learn a couple things. How we trust, right? There's first attunement. Okay. Then there's attachment. And then we gain trust. Okay. Attuning means I reflect and tune in. I reflect what you're feeling back to you. And I tune in to the experience you're having. Mm-hmm. A young child has experienced hunger. And they're crying and their parents right there. Oh, you're hurting, sweetheart. You're hurting, you know, and they see your face and your face is hurting because their face is hurting. Mm-hmm. And you're going to do whatever you can to try to meet that need. Oh, you're laughing. Well, then you laugh. I mean, just watch a parent with a child and they are literally a mirror back to the child. Yeah. One author put it this way years ago. Every one of us is born looking for someone who's looking for us. Mm-hmm. That's attunement. You actually have what they nicknamed mirror neurons, where you have your brain has the capability of thinking you're the other person in some ways. Mm-hmm. If we practice that with other people, they're going to learn to attach. They're going to attach to you. Mm-hmm. They're just going to get a sense that they like you.
Yeah. Want to be around.
Yeah. You actually listened. This isn't even a great conversation because I'm doing all the talking and we're doing this podcast, right? I get that, but we're putting some information out.
Yeah.
But if we did that, I mean, I don't know if you're interested. There may be a time where we go, you know what, Taylor, you're going to come back with a story in your life. And for an hour, I'm just going to sit in that story, enter in with you, kind of hold it with you and see where the conversation goes.
Right.
Yep. And trust that something good comes. So when we attune to a person, then we create attachment.
Mm-hmm. We're allowing for that.
Yeah. Oxytocin is released. And that's kind of the love gene, the love chemical, the trust chemical. Right. And if we learn to attach, then we learn to trust. Now, here's another little philosophical question for you. Make your brain hurt.
Okay.
How do you learn to trust God because you can't see him or it? I don't know what your view of God is, but how do you learn to trust and care about a being that you can't see?
I think that's an ebb and flow all the time. And I don't know that anybody has it perfectly figured out. I do think there's people that if they've practiced longer, have a deeper understanding of how to do that and tap into that. Mm-hmm. I think that's an ability to tap into.
Okay.
And so if I've been attuned to what I think he's saying, and then I can create that attachment and have a relationship, then that trust comes, like you said. And I think that the attunement there is really, really important. And that goes back to your question. Well, how do you even attune with something that you can't see? Well, I think you look towards other people and you look towards, you know, the messaging that could be playing out in your life. And then you're almost a tuning into something that you feel like you need to attribute to. Like, I always give this example, and maybe it's worn out, but I find that I'm most attuned to God when I'm in beautiful parts of the world. And it's because it's causing some level of wonderment. Like, I realize I don't have all the answers and that I'm actually pretty small. And so to me, that some people, that might freak them out. They might get a little bit uncomfortable with that. Like, I actually kind of like to think I'm the center of everything. Well, to me, it's more comforting to realize that I'm not, and that it's okay not to have all these answers. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I personally become really attuned, or when I see my family, and or when I see Abby succeeding and excelling at something or enjoying something. Mm-hmm. So I think I see God reflected in the people that I'm around. Mm-hmm. And then that's how I attune, attach, and trust.
Yeah, it's really good. You're practicing with people you can get to. Mm-hmm. So over the years, a number of men have just said, you know, I mean, I've been a Christian my whole life. Just be real honest. I mean, people talk about this intimacy they have with God or this personal relationship. I just don't, you know. The problem with that question is that when we, you know, if you're a religious person and you put kind of God on the table, then man, the stakes are a little higher, right?
Yeah.
So I've actually said, hey, take God off the table for a moment. You know, just put him aside. Reframe the question. You don't ever feel close or intimate to God. Okay. Who do you feel really close to and intimate with in your life?
Yeah.
And most will say, well, I don't. Mm-hmm. So the good news is that's not a God problem. That's just the way you've been formed. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where I was going. Mm-hmm. You will learn to trust and care about God if you learn to trust and care about other people and realize they care about you. You aren't alone. Mm-hmm. The psalmist said 3,000 years ago, right? As for the saints in the land, they are the golden ones in whom I delight. I think I have that right. Wow. As for my chosen allies, the ones in my life, right? They are gold to me.
Valuable. Valuable.
Valuable. Available. Mm-hmm. A joy to be with. They love me. I love them. Now I might be able to believe that something good out there exists. Why? Because I've tasted goodness in my life. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I think about the answer that I tried to spit out to your question, and yeah, I see the good reflected in other people. And that just makes me even more confident in what I can't see. Yeah. I guess I had a friend who, going back to social media, but he had posted, it's an excellent photographer, and he had this great snapshot from a recent trip of a landscape. And he put, you know, I'm not much of a religious person, but views like this make me wonder.
Yeah.
And I commented, I was like, I am religious and I still wonder. And I think there's so many people out there that feel that way, a sense of wonder. And I love that they're feeling that sense of wonder.
Yeah.
But I don't want them to just remain like in that sense of wonder, like push past it. Why are you wondering? Push past it a little bit. Not that things are going to all of a sudden be super clear, but I think you'll actually find that you're more comfortable like in the unknown. Mm-hmm. Because some things do become certain. And so when certain things become more clear, then you're almost comfortable with what you don't know in a way that you never were before.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can land here if we have time.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to address this idea of wonder and connected with what you said about, I'm just in a better place. I mean, you didn't use those words, but you're in a better place when you're in nature, when you're alone, when you're in the beauty of all that's around you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're trying to address this idea of wonderment and being in a good place. And you're probably doing both you're in a really good place, right? Your mind does some things. Okay. You and I are on a trip and you're driving and we're going down a highway and we're doing 70 miles an hour. And there's a truck in front of us, an old delivery truck. And it's just stacked with a bunch of stuff strapped down in the bed of the truck. And at the back of the bed is an old Frigidaire refrigerator. Okay. And it's strapped on there with all this other stuff. And in a moment's time, something shifts or the straps snap and the fridge leaves the bed of the truck. Mm-hmm. And it's right in front of you. It's right in front of us. You're driving and a very large old refrigerator just fell on the freeway in front of you. Mm-hmm. In less than a second's time, something will make your body swerve. You will swerve.
Yeah.
You will, in a moment, in the blink of an eye, you will move your vehicle out of the way, or at least try, right? Okay. There's a reason that happens. You have a chemical flood. Chemicals are released in your brain that light up the part of your brain that goes like into instinct. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a survival thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the other interesting part. The same chemicals that light up the part of your brain that says time to survive now also shuts down the other parts of your brain. Because if it only lit up your instinct part, you'd have all this crazy conflict in your brain. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you get a chemical flood like that, two things happen. The part of your brain that says, I got to get out of here, lights up. And if we were literally looking at your brain, the other parts of your brain would go dark.
All right.
Okay.
Can't be a conflict in a situation like that.
Can't at all. In fact, now respond to the story. We're in the car. Kind of imagine it. We're moving along. A fridge just dropped in front of you. You're about ready to crash into the fridge and you swerve and you barely miss it, but you miss it. And immediately you're, oh, thank God there's a rest stop. You get off the road within a moment notice and you get off and you put it in park. What are you feeling right now? What are you feeling?
At that point, a sense of relief.
Okay. In your body. Yes. A sense of relief. What else?
Adrenaline.
Adrenaline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Your heart rate's elevated. You might be going, right?
Yep.
Right. I mean, you're literally experiencing what happens physically to your body when that happens neurochemically. Mm-hmm. Okay. When that happened in that half a second, you weren't like, hey, you know, that old refrigerator reminds me of the one my Aunt Bessie had when I was 12. Right. I used to love, no. Or you're not saying, you know, if those knuckleheads would put it on this way and put an extra, no. Okay. What does that say about living life in general that tends to be full of stress? Will you have much experience in wonderment?
I don't think so. Wonderment requires silence and less distraction.
It literally requires other parts of your brain to be online. Cigna put something out just a couple of years ago, in a large insurance company. 75 up to 90% of all visits to physicians' offices, almost 90%. Are due to stress-related complaints and ailments. Mm. We could literally shut down that industry if we didn't live stressful lives.
Right. Because the stress is manifesting in physical ailments a lot of times.
Relational, physical, emotional. But what I'm trying to emphasize with you is that when you're in a place or you're in a really safe, interesting conversation, relating back and forth with someone you've grown to love and care about, you'll start to do interesting things. You'll start to think about your future. Mm-hmm. You'll start to have hope. Literally, the experience of hope is always, right, by logic, related to the future, right? You don't hope for what's already happened. You always, by definition, hope is future-oriented. when you're in not a virtual world, but a real world, you have hope. You love to imagine. You think great thoughts. Mm-hmm. You think about possibilities. It's not an accident that many people go, I think they either have this great idea or they think they heard from God in the shower.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else to do. Yeah.
You're by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some nice hot water or whatever, and it's stimulating your body. You're soothing. All your chemicals are kind of being metabolized. You're in a nice calm space, usually, unless you're super, super late for work.
Right.
And all of a sudden, good things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Men are profoundly lonely in that no one really knows who they are. Mm-hmm. And the price that we pay and the price that many people around their lives pay can't even be measured. And I think if we learn to create space in our lives,
mm-hmm.
have people to the house, have uninterrupted conversations. One way to do this is get to be friends with someone from another country.
Mm.
Ask them, how long does dinner take in your country?
Yeah.
They'll usually smile and go, all night,
mm-hmm.
all night long. Really? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just it's an event.
Mm-hmm.
It's slow paced.
Yeah. We put constraints on things here that probably don't need the constraints. We think they do. We think right. they need the time constraints, but
yeah.
Yep. We also spend 80 hours a week on our phones.
Yep. Did I begin with Mother Teresa or no? Did I mention her?
I'm trying to remember if I had recorded when you were mentioning the nuns.
Well, that was something different, but this is a quote from Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
This is several years old. The greatest disease in the West today is not TB or leprosy. It is being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for. Mm. We can cure physical diseases with medicine, but the only cure for loneliness, despair, and hopelessness is love. She did that by responding to a question where they said, you know, explain poverty. And she goes, the worst poverty I've ever seen is in the United States. And they're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, let me define what poverty really is. You have no idea how impoverished you've lived.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea how abnormal your normal is.
Yeah.
Some now believe the U.S. is the most relationally isolated culture in the history of the world.
Hard to argue with that. I know I feel it.
Yeah. And the great news is there are simple, not easy, simple ways that we can choose a better way and live.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. What else, man? Any other questions? Any just places you want to go?
I think just coming to... It sounds like leaving room for good things to happen is like where my mind was going. And maybe that'll be the title of this episode. I like to try to come up with catchy titles, but,
mm-hmm.
Leaving room for good things to happen. And so, you know, sitting in silence, sitting in wonderment, creating opportunities for there not to be a ton happening, being present with the people that you care about or the ones that you think you should care about, you know, community.
Oh, absolutely.
Makes a lot of sense.
And you have to have a vision for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to sacrifice. A sad reality is, and it's been for most of our years, my wife and I are inviters. We just are committed to creating space for people to get to know one another.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it all the time. And it's almost never reciprocated. Mm. And you can still ache. You can get frustrated and angry, or you can say, well, that's the world we live in. And still offer and mm-hmm. still invite and still get to know people and create that kind of goodness. And every once in a while, someone will say, hey,
mm-hmm.
right? Why don't you guys do this with us?
Right.
And it's a beautiful thing. You know, I'd be interested too, if anyone wants to talk or just, hear their thoughts or whatever. Can I give you a website?
Yes, please do. Plug whatever you'd like.
Well, yeah. So again, you asked at the beginning, what do I do? I do something called a Life Quest, which is this intensive 3.5 day life coaching experience. Intensive meaning that's all we do. It's one-on-one and we're unplugged for 3.5 days. And then just events and experiences that we feel, again, what were you going to title this?
Leaving room for good things to happen or something like
all
that.
All right. Yeah, good. Yeah. A little bit differently. My wife and I try to create room for good things to happen.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's a retreat. Perhaps it's just an evening together. Perhaps it's just good conversations. Okay.
That work. I mean, we need people like you to create room so that we can go and leave room.
Yes.
For things to happen. Yeah.
Yes. Practice a new normal and enjoy a new normal. And so I have a website. We're doing some things to it right now. I just talked to the guy that does it yesterday. So the only thing he has live on the site is the contact page. You're not going to see anything else.
Yeah. That's all you need.
And I thought I'd share that because it's the easiest thing instead of a phone number. And it's just myname.com. So it's okay. David and Geyer is Guy, G-U-Y, Guy, O-R. And so davidgeyer.com. And then, you know, if somebody's like, man, I'd love to have a conversation or, you know, they may be trying to get a hold of you or whatever, you know, there's a phone number there. There's my email, that kind of stuff. Would love to do that. Just see what comes of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll put it in the show notes so they'll be able to click it right from their phone or wherever else.
Awesome.
They're listening computer. This was really cool. It was good to, I mean, I've known you for a little bit now, but to get a deeper look at what you do and why you approach things the way that you do. And, I think it's really, really important to have people like you creating opportunities, for community and purpose and all these things that I try to drive home so hard with this podcast. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
All right. And thank you guys for listening. We love you. Bye-bye.